This is Radio Influence, podcasting redefined.
He got him in the white trunks.
He hurt him.
Beautiful.
Oh, God.
That's beautiful. He's got it.
And he forced the count. Wow.
You think it's a mission?
And it's all over. It's
nice.
All over. First round knockout.
Big
is how Rich Franklin retains his belt.
The one thing that I never thought in a million years would happen, happened.
The champion. The challenger. Here we go.
This is the MMA Report with Jason Floyd on Radio Influence.
We have reached the midway point of August, and on this week's podcast, we will get you ready for this week's Bellator 204 and PFL 6, along with previewing those fight cards. Daniel and I will tell you our top 10 fights that are going to take place between now and the end of September. We'll do our weekly buy-sell segment, and I'll let you hear my recent interviews with Eric Anders, John Tuck, and Johnny Eblen. Daniel, how you doing, man?
Jason, I am so excited. It is the biggest weekend in the sports history, and we got Bellator 204 to talk about. How excited are you to talk about Bellator 204? I mean, it doesn't get bigger than Noah Lahat, Darian Caldwell, Logan Starley, AJ Matthews. I'm jacked.
I like this Bellator fight card.
Okay, it's nice. It's nice, but to me, I don't want to come right away at it. As cool as it is to have Darian Caldwell moving up to featherweight, it kind of feels like a waste of a Darian Caldwell fight, just that he's at this level in Bellator, Jason, where I just want to see him in bad, awesome fights, like fights where he's not a heavy favorite.
Well, I mean, look, I think clearly, and he has talked about it leading up to this fight, of just basically there wasn't anything interesting at 135, you know, so he's returning to 145 pounds, and I fully expect that if he gets an impressive win on Friday night, that I think the likelihood is his next fight will be against Patricio Pitbull, and who knows whether it's at 35 or 45, but I think that's what Bellator's building to right now.
I think that's a type of fight that I cannot wait for. This is kind of like the transition point, but I will say, I don't know if Darian Caldwell is the type of guy that needs to prove himself in order to get to warrant a title shot, just given that the championship versus championship idea sells on its own. But at the end of the day, there's a lot of risk here for Darian Caldwell. And then, you know, this card isn't the biggest in the world, but I guess I like what you're saying in that there's obviously plenty of intriguing prospects. And then every time there's a James Gallagher fight, you know, it has a lot of interest, not only for what happens inside the cage, but there's always the question of if Conor McGregor is going to pull another WWE after the match type, you know, riot. So I guess my sarcasm is not warranted. This card is fine. I must say, I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to Tywin Claxton. It's a solid viewing, you know. It's not something I'm going to watch live, Jason, but it's absolutely something I will watch, and it'll be cool to see this card taking place in Sioux Falls as well.
Yeah, I mean, look, I love the James Gallagher fight. I mean, Bellator did not give him an easy fight in his 135-pound debut, taking on the former CFFC champion there. So, I mean, in terms of this main card, I really like it, and I think there's some interesting matchups on the preliminary card if you want to take those in. I do plan to watch these fights live on Friday, as I do have an early morning flight on Saturday going up to Nashville. For week two of the NFL preseason. Yes, Daniel, the NFL season was here, was down in Miami last weekend. And now I head up to Nashville for our final two games. I do got to tell you, I did have to go buy a new MacBook Pro this weekend. And it's truly amazes me every time I go into the Apple store how packed it is. Like,
I've never been inside an Apple store. I want you to know that. So I'm from the Rio Grande Valley. All right. The only apples we have are on the side of the road, and it's my uncle selling them. We don't have an Apple store here. What do people do in the Apple store?
there's a lot of people in there that are just, you know, looking at the various Apple, or, you know, they're, you know, getting their, you know, whether it's their iPhone, iPad, MacBook, whatever you looked at. And I mean, you go in there and, you know, I knew I was kind of at this point where I needed to get a new MacBook. And, you know, so, you know, go in there and, you know, basically you have to essentially walk in to set an appointment. Guy comes over and, like, he's basically trying to upsell me on MacBooks. I'm like, dude, this is going to be like my third MacBook. You don't got to sell me on it. I'm not getting a Windows machine. You're not trying to convert somebody over to Apple. And, and then of course, so I got the brand new MacBook, and, you know, one of the things that I didn't necessarily realize until I left the store is that all the Thunderbolt adapters had changed since my last MacBook Pro. So I had to go back the next day and get a bunch of new adapters.
Oh, that's awful. That is the one thing that I dislike about Apple. Even though I know a lot of their adapter deal is moving along with the times, I still can't get over the fact of how they changed the earphone plug. You know, is still bothersome.
My earphones are they're Bluetooth, but there is no USB on my new MacBook. So it's all these Thunderbolt 3 that you have to have, and I've got all these adapters. But
you bought an iPad. Sounds like you bought a damn iPad, Jason.
Dude, when it comes to Apple, I pretty much got it all. I've got the iPhone, I've got the MacBook, I've got the iPad. If it's Apple product, Apple TV, got that. Yeah, I pretty much have everything Apple. But it actually made me think about, you know, we like to talk about some of the stuff we're watching on TV. I've been watching the 2000s documentary on CNN, and just kind of full circle on this, it was talking about how, you know, people thought Apple was crazy when they went into retail business. I'm like, yeah, best decision they ever made. And, you know, they're talking about how things have just changed. And that was back in 2007. And of course, it made me think about, like, man, how much of a different world MMA is in 2018 as opposed to 2007. And I think we'll probably get more in depth this in a future episode. But it's like, I guess we probably, you know, look at, you know, when WWE came in and bought the UFC, it just kind of, sometimes I look at MMA and I'm like, man, this is just entertainment. Let's stop calling it a sport. This is just straight up become entertainment, because it seems like 2018 is a year of, I want to be a champion two weight classes.
Yeah, that's, it's kind of tiring, is it not? Just because I think the cool thing about 2007, 2008 is you had these defined champions, and it was just, you had this, yeah, two or three title defenses per weight class from each individual champion within a given year. And when you had that luxury, there were not a whole lot of pay-per-views that didn't have a main event that you were looking forward to. Obviously there was there was your exceptions, there was your injury replacements, but I think maybe the dual division champion is something that we see a lot of, because it's an idea that was talked about throughout the years, and it's something we really, you know, just the idea of grabbing all the gold is such a phenomenal idea, Jason. And it's a great short-term moment to see a guy with two championship belts over his shoulders. But here's a question to our audience. When's the last time we've seen a MMA champion hold two titles and regularly defend those two titles and just kind of keep that steady supply line of title defenses going? That's what I'm getting at, is the downside is it kind of stalls the championship fights, the quantity of championship fights we would have got in the first place.
I have a feeling we're probably going to see that moment happen in either the UFC or Bellator. You know, at some point, you have to imagine that's going to happen, which is a great transition into Friday's Bellator show up in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. We mentioned headline by Darren Caldwell against Noah Lahat. You know, also when you look at those prelims, you know, for just the UFC fan out there, there are some names you're going to recognize. David Machad, Jason Jackson, two guys who've obviously been Jason Jackson was part of the Ultimate Fighter, we've one fight on the Contender Series, as I recall. You know, they've got some nice little prospects. So a nice little preliminary card. You know, look, this is not going to be a fight card that's going to get a ton of viewers for Bellator, but a nice little fight card. And as I was, you know, kind of looking up this card over the past couple of days, and I was thinking about Darian Caldwell, and I mean, no question, he's, an elite fighter, one of the best fighters in Bellator. And maybe think about, where does he rank in terms of the top fighters in Bellator? And to me, your top three fighters, I don't think there's even debate on it. Number one is Rory McDonald. Number two is Gegard Mousasi. Number three is Ryan Bader. There's no argument right there.
Okay, I kind of agree with you, and I have them down in that order. But I will say the one guy who I can look at him and maybe poke a hole at him might be Ryan Bader. I feel like Ryan Bader, if you're a major Darian Caldwell fan, a major Patricio Pitbull fan, I don't know if Ryan Bader is as locked and loaded as Mousasi and McDonald are, just because of the quality of fighters he's going up against, even though light heavyweight is pretty solid up top. So that's the one guy, Jason, who I wouldn't say is locked and loaded. With that being said, you look at my list, those are my top three guys as well.
I mean, he's 10-1 in his last 11 fights. I mean, but obviously when he was in the UFC, I think the knock on Ryan Bader's was he would get to that point and he just couldn't take that next step. But then when you get after three and number four, even though obviously we don't know if his next fight's going to be in Bellator, UFC, maybe it's in Golden Boy MMA, but Michael Chandler, I would put him number four. I would still think you kind of technically have to still classify him as a Bellator fighter, even though he's not under contract with the organization. But then to me, this is where the Darian Caldwell conversation gets interesting, because I think people could have him at 5, 6, 7, 8, maybe even 9. He's somewhere in that range in terms of, but I kind of feel like, when people talk about some of the best fighters in Bellator, Darian Caldwell's name just isn't mentioned.
Yeah, and it kind of shows you also, maybe, I don't know, before going into this exercise, I kind of thought there was going to be more competition here, because to me personally, I feel like Caldwell really slots in well right past Chandler and Patricio Pitbull. And then after that, I think that's kind of where Caldwell has his case. And I think given the idea, I figured I was going to get to 10 names in the entire Bellator roster before I start looking at Darian Caldwell, just because as talented as he is, that loss to Joe Tymingalo really dings him a tad bit as he continues to, showcase himself. I mean, I think we both know or both think that Darian Caldwell's talent level is still better than his resume, despite being Bellator champion. This is the kind of guy that I think would have much success against most Bellator 135ers, if not all of them. He still has to go out there and prove it a little bit more to move up the rankings. But we mentioned Patricio and Chandler, Jason. I'm just interested, who else would you kind of put in that mix with Darian Caldwell?
This is no particular order. I just started writing down names. I was on Bellator's website going through the roster. After Patricio, this is in no particular order, by the way. Emmanuel Sanchez, Daniel Vichel, Aleema May McFarlane, Julia Budd, King Mo, Fedor, Phil Davis, Benson Henderson, Douglas Lima, Andre Koreshkov.
Farland's an interesting choice, right?
I mean, look, I mean, it's going to be, and we've had this conversation about where does she rank in just terms of women's 125-pound fighters, and it's going to be tough for her to kind of be considered top 3-4-ish just because of who she's going to fight in Bellator in comparison to who some of the fighters that are going to be fighting in the UFC. But I think when you talk about, she would be to me probably, lower top 10, maybe in that 11 to 15 range in terms of best fighters. But I think when you think about and I think the ceiling's very high on Aleema May McFarlane, and I think if Bellator promotes her effectively, I think she can kind of become more of a draw than what she is currently.
Yeah, well, the thing with Aleema May, it's kind of how you ask the question, because you watch her fight, and she's really excellent, but it's hard to compare her with Darian Caldwell, I think, inside the cage. I think from a technical standpoint, you look at a fighter like maybe Amanda Nunes or Rose Namajunas, and I think you feel more confident about contrasting her with the top 10 in the UFC. With Aleema May, it still feels like that specific Bellator division is light years behind all the male divisions. But when you look at the context of where she's in, and if you ask the question, the most dominant fighters in Bellator, that's where I think she over time is going to rise up the ranks, because just looking upon the horizon, I don't see anyone in her division that is going to give her problems. And outside of Bellator, potential fighters they could bring in, I think she's going to beat them too. So over time, I don't know if she's going to prove herself as a pound for pound, you know, top Bellator fighter. But if you ask the question, who's going to be the most dominant fighter, Alimaleh is going to be in a position to piece together win after win after win. And then comes what you mentioned, Bellator's ability to market Alimaleh, because she's got a great personality and people thoroughly respect dominance. And for Bellator, you can probably count on, you know, four hands, all the people that I think matter on TV, which is Alimaleh, I think, is kind of on she's kind of almost there, but not quite yet, I guess. Is, you know, there if you go to a random bar, you mention Alimaleh McFarland, no one's going to know her name quite yet, but she definitely has potential.
I think the question with Darren Caldwell in terms of kind of where he ranks in terms of the best fighters in Bellator is if you were in a room of 10 people watching Friday night's Bellator show and you said, is Darren Caldwell one of your top five fighters in Bellator? How many say yes?
Well, I think they would say no, and then they would start doing the exercise, and they might say yes afterwards.
I think
Darren Caldwell top five fighter right away, Jason. But then you start looking at the names, you look at his resume, that's when you think he could probably creak in there, at least top six.
Yeah, no, I mean, he's definitely up there. I mean, I think once you get – if Chandler's in your list and Patricio, I think you have to put Patricio right underneath Michael Chandler. And then that's where I think Caldwell fits in at, right at number six.
So, like, do we – like, when do we say congratulations to Noah Lahat? After we just did this segment.
Okay. Yeah. Anyone who knows the MMA report on Jinx, yeah, it's but I think we
had just jinxed him so bad, Jason.
But
we
have done that, but I think the thing that really stuck out to me about Darren Caldwell was actually his last fight against Leandro Higo. I did not see that fight going that way. I thought it would be a lot closer than what ultimately did. You mentioned about that loss of Joe Tymenglo a couple of years ago where, I mean, look, he was dominating that fight in the first and second round and just makes one small mistake there at the beginning of the third and gets choked out in 9 seconds. But, I mean, I think that this is a – I mean, I would not call it a showcase fight for Darren Caldwell. I think it's a nice matchup. I don't think this is a situation where, you know, maybe Bellator's trying to – you know, quote unquote, give him a gimme fight. I mean, you know, Noah Lahat, who's now training in Las Vegas, still does, you know, here and there training there at AKA, but primarily in Las Vegas. I mean, I think the thing with Darren Caldwell, and if anyone who's followed his career, I mean, this was a guy that was known for his wrestling, obviously, you know, being a collegiate wrestler there at NC State, but you've seen him gradually get better, especially on the feet. And, you know, and that to me is, I just think that I'm expecting another stoppage victory here for Darren Caldwell. I think he does get a submission at some point. You know, I'm guessing probably second round.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a first round finish for Darren Caldwell against Noah Lahat. I mean, Lahat is a solid challenger. At the end of the day, this dude's a top 10 Bellator featherweight, for what that's worth. I think the problem for Bellator right now is growing out the middle tier of all their divisions. I feel like there's a pretty big gap in talent level when you take a look at the different tiers of Bellator divisions, Jason. I think you look at the top four or five fighters of each given weight class, and you look at the bottom five of the top 10 of each weight class, the gap is pretty big. And I think it's going to be evident here. Lahat's solid, but Darren Caldwell, when I kind of look at this fight, I think he's going to have an advantage in basically every aspect. And the exciting thing about Darren Caldwell is that rare thing you see in fighters where it's a high level of progression. I mean, it's the same type of thing we're seeing out of Aaron Pico. And it's the same type of thing we see out of great fighters. That is what gets you excited. And it's the projection is hard because you have a fighter who really, really has a great skill in amateur wrestling heading into his MMA career. But the IQ that brought him to amateur wrestling success is something that he can use in MMA to learn how to be a great striker. And he's done that. He's become incredibly dangerous. This is a guy who's really great in space. And I think he's going to take advantage of that space in that first round, Jason, and get his hand raised.
We mentioned, of course, we've been talking about this main event, but the co-main event, really interested to kind of see the development of Logan Storley, of course, one of these collegiate wrestlers coming to Bellator, and you got to give Bellator a lot of credit of, you know, finding these collegiate wrestlers they thought would transition well in MMA. And, you know, I think about the best way to describe this fight is he's taking on a very game AJ Matthews. Of course, AJ's been in Bellator, you know, for a very long time. He is coming off that split decision win against Kendall Grove, which, you know, that was a fight where both those guys entered that fight knowing the loser was going to get cut. And of course, they were friends and training, former training partners. You know, to me, I think this is a nice step up in competition for Logan Storley to see him take his next step. And I am expecting to see another Logan Storley win. I just think that he'll use his wrestling, and I expect this to be a pretty easy decision win for him.
Yeah, and I think AJ Matthews, I think, scrappy Bellator veteran, but he hasn't had much success in the promotion. And I think Logan Storley's due for a decision win here. I think when you look at his last few fights, you look at AJ Matthews' last few fights, I think Logan Storley has clearly established himself as the superior fighter, and a loss here would be pretty rough. When you're starting out in the sport or you're starting out as a prospect and you're making that transition, every once in a while you're going to have those blips in the radars, those losses you probably shouldn't have accumulated. So that's always a threat here. But it would be a massive disappointment for Logan Storley to go in Friday and come out with the loss. So I think he certainly wins here, Jason. And it's no surprise. I think he's going to out-wrestle AJ Matthews. I just think AJ Matthews is going to make it hard for him to finish him.
Is it crazy that James Gallagher does not have a Wikipedia page?
It's absolutely nuts. I feel like if you're in at least 5 Conor McGregor Instagram pictures, you should have a Wikipedia page. I mean, every person that guy touches is famous. You know, Dylan Danis was a star before. And I know Dylan Danis has credentials, but basically everyone in his camp is a star. But yeah, that's nuts. You know, Wikipedia editors, they got to work on a couple things. They got to work on making a Wikipedia profile for James Gallagher, updating fight cancellations, and other things.
Yeah, well, that's the one thing that I do love about Tapology. It tells you about the cancellated fight. And this is kind of, we kind of, I think, in a way, forget about it. But the last time we saw James Gallagher was June 24th of last year at Bellator NYC when he got that rear naked choke win over Chinzo Machida. He's had 2 canceled fights since then. He was supposed to fight back in November of last year against Jeremiah Libiano. He got an injury. Then he was supposed to face Adam Borix back in April. Another injury, pulls out of that one. And now he's taking on the former CFFC champion in Ricky Bandejas, who I would tell you when I heard Ricky had signed with Bellator, my first thought was, man, this is a great signing for Bellator, a guy that I thought maybe would end up in the UFC. And this is a tough fight for James. And, you know, I mean, look, I think if James does plan to stay at 135 and he gets a win here, who knows? Maybe he sits there and calls out Darren Caldwell, you know, on Friday night.
I think if he wins, he'll definitely call it the champion. That's the type of attitude James Gallagher brings. Yeah, Ricky Bandejas is a tough opponent. I mean, this is a guy who very early on in his career went up against a UFC vet in Nick Pace. He certainly lost, but since then, I mean, he has quality wins. He has a quality win over Mirab Dalashvili, 5 consecutive wins in CFFC. This is a guy, win or lose, he's a solid part of Bellator's roster and a guy you can – who definitely wants to maximize the opportunity, has the skill set to do so. But for James Gallagher, again, early on in his career, the focus is primarily on him. I mean, for Bellator, the matchmaking is all about getting James Gallagher victories. This one is a tough proposition, but it's one in which I think he's going to win. And it's surprising. It's been such a while since he has fought. But I think that, I guess, makes clear how effective he is at getting headlines because he constantly is a part of the conversation.
Opening matchup, we got Tywon Claxton against Chris Licioni. You know, Tywon Claxton, everyone, you know, may remember his last fight, even though he got the win, really wasn't happy with his performance, which I like kind of hearing. I like a fighter saying, hey, you know what? I wish I would have performed a little bit better. Of course, he's a guy that ultimately really got into Bellator, but, you know, he called out Aaron Pico, and that's ultimately how he got a Bellator contract.
Well, I'm glad he got it because this guy is incredibly promising. And I think it goes without saying that he's the pick here. But it's nice to see guys who are self-aware, Jason. There's nothing I hate more than a guy who left a lot on the table and is acting like he just won the Super Bowl. So I think Tyler Claxton, I mean, I think for him, it's pretty important to go out there and get the finish.
You speak about promising. One of the things that always sticks out to me about this preliminary card is a fight that just got announced, I want to say within the last day or so, and very recently, and that's Romero Cotton, who's 2-0. Of course, one of those collegiate wrestlers that Bellator signed. He's going to be taking on Willie Whitehead. Of course, that's one to pay attention to. I mentioned about David Machado, Jason Jackson, both on this fight card. So those are a couple of names to stick out if you're going to watch those Bellator prelims, which you got to download that Bellator app, which I would tell you, there's been plenty of times just on a Friday night, just sit on the couch and pop on the Bellator app on my iPad. And at least for me, I can't speak for anybody else, but for me, the stream pretty much is always, pretty solid.
How do you watch it? Do you have like a stand for your iPad?
Yeah, I do.
Oh, you see, that's top 1%.
All you gotta do is like hop on Amazon. They're not that expensive.
Jason, I'm part of the working class. All right, unlike you, flying first class with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, I got a proposition. My iPhone on my computer when I want to watch something on Netflix while I'm working. I don't have no stand, but yeah, that's a great way to, because I think that's a great way to consume the prelims. Because look, there are some interesting fights there, but not every fight's appointment viewing TV. And, as we live in this day and age where we have so much content, it's an overflowing buffet of content. I think the way a lot of people are watching maybe not the most important fights is they have it on in the background as one of their two or three screens in which they just consume massive amount of information. And, it's not the way I think my grandfather would have wanted people to intake media, but it I think it's an effective way to kind of stay in touch with the Bellator prelims, and it's certainly worth, being the third screen available.
No, it's, it's when I'm home on a Friday night, I want to watch it. It's just, to me, it's a great way. And also, you can sign in on your television provider and watch the main card. I know, especially I've seen people on social media who are on the West Coast who really take advantage of that. But that'll be on Friday night. But on Thursday night, we have PFL 6, which is going to take place at the Ocean Resort Casino in Atlantic City, New Jersey. I actually believe this is the former Rebel Casino, which, of course, Bellator done shows there. I want to say UFC did at least one show there back in the day. Of course, this event is going to feature welterweights on this fight card, also middleweights on this fight card. And of course, also K.O. Harrison's on this fight card, so that really sticks out to you, kind of see, even though the matchmaker with K.O. Harrison, I don't understand why people in the K.O. Harrison camp would put her in there against a fighter who's 8-1, but maybe by the time this fight happens, we'll realize why she got put in there. But one of the things, when I looked at the main card as opposed to the prelims, the thing that stuck to me about the prelims is there is much more name value on the prelims than the main card.
It shows you that your performance matters. It's crazy to me. If we did a buy or sell segment, that one fight into the Bellator tournament, Jake Shields would be relegated to the prelims, we would sell that idea. Like, that's insane. Jake Shields on the prelims after one performance, it was an awful performance against Ray Cooper, but it's just startling to see that Jake Shields is fighting on Facebook Watch, Jason. It's absolutely nuts.
It is crazy. I mean, Rick Story's a part of that. John Howard, also Lewis Taylor had an impressive win in the opening round. Eddie Gordon. Based on the way this lineup looks here on the PFL Twitter, it looks like Eddie Gordon's actually the very first fight of the night. When this card, there's to me what ultimately, honestly, will drive me on Thursday night to the television set, saying I can stay up till because by the way, this fight card doesn't start till 10 p.m. Eastern. So for me, man, to stay up to midnight, 12:30 on Thursday night, ooh, I don't know if I can do that. I might have to get a little nap in, Daniel. But the one fight that would be drawing me to this card actually is Kayla Harrison.
Especially because as poor as the matchmaking is maybe from her camp, just because it's like, you know what, maybe they can chill out it's exciting as a fan, you know, because I want to see what happens if she gets thrown in there with higher level competition. Now, Josette Cotton isn't a fighter who is the scariest person in the world, despite her impressive record. I think Kayla Harrison is going to win. But even though you kind of question the matchmaking from Kayla's perspective, as a fan, Jason, I'm interested in this fight because I look at this and I'm like, Kayla Harrison, super promising, but she's in a type of fight where she's incredibly vulnerable. This is a big time test for her. And that's why I'm definitely looking forward to Kayla Harrison. It's almost like maybe this should be the headliner. Maybe Kayla Harrison should be the main event.
Do you get the feeling they're rushing her?
Yeah, I absolutely am. But the thing is, like, we had this conversation about Aaron Pico, and it seems like the rush was worth it. Even though his first fight was bad,
yeah,
it seems like he was able to handle the rush. I don't know if Kayla Harrison's in that same conversation, because the thing with Aaron Pico is he had, you know, the golden boxing, the golden gloves deal with the wrestling. It was a combination. But it definitely feels like they're rushing her, and it's not really necessary because it's like, what are you rushing Kayla Harrison for? You rush fighters for big-time fights. You rush a Kayla. If you're the UFC and you sign Kayla Harrison, you're going to want to rush her for Chris Cyborg. If you're PFL, there isn't a fighter to rush her for. The entire marketing perspective of Kayla Harrison, I believe, is watch Kayla Harrison look dominant. That, to me, is the way the PFL should market her, because there aren't a whole lot of intriguing matchups for her.
Yeah, well, I think the tough part for PFL is actually finding matchups for her. I mean, when you look at, you know, we've talked about in the past, I mean, look at, you know, the struggles Bellator has had in trying to develop in a 145-pound division, not just fight, you know, and find fights for Julia Budd after the Marlos Kunin fight. But when I look at the rest of this fight card, I'm interested, can Ray Cooper do what he did in his opening round fight in this PFL tournament? You know, we saw him just completely dominate Jake Shields, even though there was poor points in that fight where Jake Shields on the ground, and I'm like, Ray, why are you going into his world? Like, you are just piecing him apart on the feet. Why are you trying to play a ground fight?
Exactly. That was crazy, but that was so dominant. That was such a – I think that's probably – I don't think we're going to see that type of Ray Cooper on PFL 6, Jason. Just because I think we saw the best case scenario for Ray Cooper inside the cage. I mean, he for one, looked on fire. Everything was clicking. But also his opponent in Jake Shields, in that performance, his talent level was so far below his name value that I think that maybe distorts our perspective on Ray Cooper. I think he's gonna win. But I think we may want to slow our roll. I don't know if this performance is going to look as good. It's just a matter of, it's really damn hard to look that good inside a cage at this level of MMA.
Yeah, it's, the co-main event, Magomed and Bohan, both guys, you know, scored victories in the opening round. Magomed got 6 points, Bohan got 5 points. That's one that interests me. And Zeferino, who got 6 points in the opening round, taking on Villafer, that one sticks out to me. So I probably will not watch this fight card live, most likely, and just mainly just because of you know, how early I start my work day. You know, but definitely I'll be DVR on this card, and I'll definitely I'll probably download onto my iPad and watch on my flight up to Nashville on Saturday.
Well, you know what I'm looking forward to, Jason?
What's
PFL.
That?
PFL advanced statistics. We're talking $28 million worth of advanced statistics, Jason. I saw that. It's like, man, if you're spending $28 million on advanced MMA statistics, that may be a bit of an overpay.
When I saw that, what was it? Was it late last week when the news came out about how they raised $28 million in capital money? And I mean, look, there's obviously some power players that invested in them, you know, and I just, one of my initial thoughts was, I wonder what the pitch was like. And I just, I mean, you look at, you know, and when you look at the business side of this, and, you know, and, you know, not using local ticket sellers to get people in the building, and they're not doing well on the television ratings here in the United States on NBCSN. They're touting, what was it? They were touting 1 million people. I'm like, that's obviously a worldwide number. That's not a U.S. number. I wonder what the pitch was to raise this money.
Well, what do you think it was?
I don't know. I mean, look,
like, that's a lot of money.
And we've talked about this many times. We hope the PFL succeeds because this will be awesome for fighters. And I think it would just be awesome for the industry, but you can't help but sit back and just kind of question how this thing's going to work financially because, I mean, yeah, we want the fighters to make all the money they possibly can, but the promotion's got to make money too to be a successful business.
It seems like the one thing PFL is really great at is like networking. You know, they're just really great at networking. They're really good at getting in touch with Kevin Hart and getting his money. I don't think it's going to be the greatest investment for those that invested, but maybe if you're PFL, the strategy should be catering yourself to the top 1% of American society. You should sell like a season pass for like $1 million to celebrities. Be like, you get to attend every PFL event. You get all these benefits, everything. You sell to like 50 people. That's $50 million. And then you give away, you know, free tickets or whatever to fill up the crowd.
Well, I saw the other on Monday. I saw they were doing buy one get ones for this event on Thursday, and tickets are $20. I'm like, you know what? That's wow. If you're in the Atlantic City, New Jersey area, and you can get two tickets for $20, like, man, that's a hell of a deal.
Yeah, you're watching several fights that are UFC quality fights.
Damn, I've paid, you know, in the upwards of $50, $60, $70 to watch regional MMA.
That's insane, Jason. That's crazy talk. Well, I don't know why you would spend that much.
Well, first off, I don't do the GA tickets because, I mean, look, you know, there's only going to be so many seats, and if you don't get there early enough, you're really not going to get a good seat. So give me the reserve seating so I can, you know, show up right as about the first fight starting. And there used to be an event here I would go to, and they were at a venue where if you're in the reserve seats, you had your own waitress, so it made life real easy. I didn't even have to get up. I could just sit down, and you give them your credit card, and they would take care and make sure you had whatever you wanted.
We're beginning to figure out how much of the elite social class you are throughout this podcast. First is the iPad stand. Now it's the, I can't even bother myself with general admission. I need reserved and a personal waitress and a foot massage and everything. Like, Jesus, Jason.
Look, you tell me, you know what, I can buy a $70 ticket and I don't got to get out of my seat at any point unless I need to go to the bathroom. Sign me up for that.
Yeah, all you need is somebody to hold a bucket over your chair while you have to go pee, and then you're set. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. My big issue is going to the restroom all the time. You know, I always have to go to the restroom. So it ruins movies. It ruins movies because I can never make it through an entire movie viewing without going to the restroom. I feel like there should be an invention where when you go to the restroom, your movie pops up over the urinal and you can still, you know, you can still watch it. You know, I'm just pitching ideas here, and I know they're golden.
What, you haven't been to the sports bars that have the little TV above the urinal?
I have not.
Don't have that in the Rio Grande?
No, they have one outhouse toilet.
Oh, come on. That's like the popular thing now, the little TV above the urinal, yeah. So if you know you're out watching a game, it's on in the bathroom as well.
Wow. Well, that's, you see, I guess I invented something that already exists.
See, all these things you're learning here on the podcast, Daniel. I'm teaching some stuff.
Yeah. I can't wait to go buy an iPad stand.
They're not, I think the one I bought was like $20. I mean,
oh my gosh, $20.
Yeah, you can definitely get that. But that is PFL 6, which goes down on Thursday night there in New Jersey. Next up, we want to talk about the top 10 MMA fights that are going to happen between now and the end of August. Of course, beginning of August, we've got Conor Khabib, which the ticket prices did come out for that earlier today. And if you want to go to Las Vegas and see that fight, you're going to have to pay a good amount of money. The cheap ticket is $205. The most expensive ticket, $2,505. Then it's $2,005, $1,505, $1,005, $755, $555, $405, $355, $305, and $255 for tickets. So if you're going to go to Las Vegas that week and you want to go to Conor Khabib, you are going to have to pay a little bit of money. And of course, the following week, We'll have Fedor and Shell and Bader and Mitrione. Should note, did talk to Mike Mazzulli earlier this week, and Matt Mitrione and Ryan Bader both have submitted out-of-competition drug tests for their upcoming fight. So should have some news on the test results for those here in the next couple of days. But, you know, we did want to talk about, you know, some of the top fights are going to happen. And Daniel, when I started going down my list of fights in the UFC and Bellator, to get down to my 10, I started at 19 fights.
Wow. Sorry, my mic cut out, but I wanted to ask you a question here.
Go ahead.
19 is a lot. You know what was the most startling thing to me? Is that my question to you is, did Henan Burrell make any of the 19 fights?
No.
Which is understandable, right, given his track record. But that, to me, is the startling fact. It's how far down the ladder, you know, one of the guys who was the king for a hot minute in his weight class, Henan Burrell, is. He didn't even make your top 19, and we're talking about, what, a month and a half of worth of fight cards.
Yeah, I mean, I think that as we go down our top 10, I'm pretty sure we can both – I think it's very safe for me to say that we both have the – our number one fight is likely the same fight.
No, it's – I don't think it is.
What's your number one fight?
My number one fight is Darren Till, Tyron Woodley.
Okay, that's my number two.
Yeah, yeah. I know I'm being contrarian here. I know Musasi McDonald's like the biggest Bellator fight ever. But
if that was in the UFC, that'd be a huge fight.
It would be. But here's the thing, Jace. Darren Till does a much better job of hyping up a fight than Gegard Mousasi.
Mousasi's got a lot better, though.
he has. He has. Okay. And understandable to have that number one.
What's the odds that Till actually fights September 8th?
Oh, dude.
Because look, the biggest, you know, his first fight in terms of this matchup is making weight on September 7th.
Look, I'm not taking that into account for the quality of the fight. You're right. and I tell you what, that is not something we should forget, because I still remember how angry I was the last time he fought and how badly he missed weight. And my whole point was like, this guy should never fight at 170 again. And now he's fighting for the welterweight championship, which is the most nuts thing ever.
I mean, look, it's my number two fight, but I think, you know, and obviously we'll talk more about this as the weeks go on, but I think the question mark is what happens if he misses weight? Does Woodley still fight?
No, I don't think he does. I think Woodley would have done it like 5 years ago. But I think he's kind of tired of bending over backwards with the UFC. And I think, obviously, that tiredness was evident when he was challenging for the title, not being given that championship fight. I think Tyron Woodley is the type of fighter who clearly understands how valuable it is in this sport to be selfish. So I think if Darren Till misses weight, you have to be. You have to be. I think if Darren Till misses weight, Woodley is the type of fighter that would not take the fight. And I don't mean that in a negative way, Jason. I just say that that's what I think Woodley would do. And then we're looking at the good thing is there's a solid replacement, you know, Montano Shevchenko. That's still 500,000 buys. So at least there's that.
Let me just go down my top 10. And then after I get through my top 10, you can go to your top 10. So number one, I've got Rory McDonald versus Gegard Mousasi. Two, Woodley versus Till. Three, I went pretty much. So 1-2 were easy for me. After two was kind of like, man, I could have put these in various spots, but that's what I went with. Three, I went Lima versus Koreshkov. Four, Gaethje versus Vic. Five, Rodriguez versus Magomed Sharipov. Six, Andrade versus Kovalevich. Seven, Magny versus Oliveira. Eight, Gallagher versus Bandejas. Nine, Pico versus Higo. And 10, Rivera versus Dotson.
Interesting. So here's my list, and my number four is the biggest jump up, I think. I have Till Woodley, number one. Mousasi McDonald, number two. Now, number three, I differ a little bit. I have Vic and Gaethje. Now, I have Lima and Koreshkov at number five.
Okay.
Number four is Pico Leandro Higo.
That's a great fight.
That fight's a great fight. Obviously, both guys don't have the respect like Lima and Koreshkov have. But Aaron Pico is such a shining star. His upside is so immense that that's why, even though this fight maybe doesn't have two guys who are clearly, you know, championship caliber, guys who have already been in the championship picture in Kreshkov and Lima, who are also strikers, that's a great fight. But I want to see Aaron Pico get supremely challenged, and that's what's going to happen against Leandro Higo. You know, if Aaron Pico wins here, he could get a championship fight, which is kind of crazy fast. He probably won't. He probably will get one more fight before that. But that's why I have that at number four. And speaking of upside, I actually have Tatiana Suarez, Carla Esparza there, just because of Tatiana Suarez. Then we're talking about some lighter weight fights in the UFC. Rivera, John Dodson. So much on the line for Jimmy Rivera. I mean, so much on the line to kind of return to championship level. Rodriguez Sharapov is there at eight. That 9 and 10, I actually have Teixeira and AJ McKee. And then 10, you know, I thought about putting Shevchenko, Nico Montano there just to pay some respect to Shevchenko. I swear. At some point, you've got to put that fight on there. It's a championship fight, Jason. It's interesting, sort of. Shevchenko's awesome. You got to put it there somewhere. I looked at Antonio Carlos Jr., but I tell you what, I put Mark Hunt and Alexei Oleinik there. You know, it's not the greatest fight in the world, but I just thoroughly enjoy watching Mark Hunt fight.
By the way, Valentin Shevchenko currently a 9-1 betting favorite.
Was that fight in your top 19?
No. Just because the reason I say I just think it's going to be just a one sided beatdown.
Yeah, it probably will.
I would tell you some of the fights that UFC 228 was a fight card I had the most fights listed down. My other one that I didn't put in the list was Aljamain Sterling, Cody Stamann.
That's a great fight.
Yeah, I mean, I had Hunt Hellenic down. Lovato Salter was another one that I had down. When I initially did my list, Jimmy Manuel and Glover Teixeira were fighting, but earlier on Tuesday, Glover Teixeira pulled out of that fight. And look, I'm interested to see Nikita Krylov's return to the UFC.
Is Rampage Vanderlei top 50?
Top
Which 50. Fight are you looking forward to more, Rampage Vanderlei or Montano Shevchenko? Shevchenko.
Ugh, man. I guess Rampage Vanderlei.
Wow,
you know, I think it's more of just being an old school MMA fan and just kind of remembering the, you know, kind of the history there. I'll tell you a fight that I think is going to be fun to watch is next week is Courtney Casey and Angela Hill.
Nice save there. I was about to call you a misogynist, Jason, but nice save there to say you're looking forward to a Hill.
Look, would you put money on Montano making to the second round?
I would put more money on that than Vanderlei making it to the fight.
Touche.
Because you know, to me, the interesting odds are, will there be a referee controversy in the Montano fight? Will there be a bad late stoppage? You know, I feel like
it is Texas.
I feel like the conversation is going to be about how Montano's corner should have stopped the fight in between rounds or something like that. That's what I see kind of up in the clouds coming at us.
You're probably spot on with that one. But I mean, look, I mean, obviously we're looking forward to October, but there's still a lot of great fights that are going to be taking place. I mean, that Gaethje Vick fight, that's a fight that, it's kind of crazy. If James Vick gets a win there, I just wonder what that says about Justin Gaethje.
Yeah. Well, I don't know, because to me, James Vick is like, the thing is, James Vick is going to hit Justin Gaethje a lot because of his reach and because of Gaethje's defense. So I think we kind of know what Justin Gaethje is. He's one of the most exciting fighters on the planet. He has the offensive skill set to be a top five lightweight, but he has the defensive skill set to make him look like a guy outside the top 20. And I think that's kind of where Justin Gaethje finds himself.
I mentioned about Shevchenko being a 9-1 favorite, and looking on bestfightodds.com, the next biggest UFC favorite, you're actually going to hear from next, and that's Eric Anders, who is a 7.5-1 favorite next week at UFC Fight Night 135, as he's going to take on Tim Williams. I had a chance to catch up with him, so you're going to hear my conversation with Eric Anders. Then you're going to hear from John Tuck, who's going to be a part of the UFC Fight Pass prelims, a part of that fight card, takes on Drew Dober. And then you're going to hear my conversation with Johnny Evelyn, who's going to be a part of Shamrock FC 208 on Saturday night on Flow Combat, as he's going to be taking on Raven Carter.
That was such a good transition.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report is a man that's going to be returning to the UFC Octagon on Saturday night, August the 25th. It is Eric Anders. Eric, man, as always, I appreciate the time, man. How's things been?
Man, everything's been great, man. You know, healthy, well-conditioned, in shape, man, just ready to go.
One of the things I wanted to mention about what you've got going on here for this fight, anyone who's ever talked to you, they know how there's always a cause you have before every fight, and you recently came out on your Instagram for Trey White, a 14-year-old. So how did this come about to where you learn what he was going through and raising money to help him out?
Yeah, you know, I try to do something for somebody, you know, when I can, and man, I put something out on Facebook about a month or so ago, and you know, I went through the comments, and you know, his story was one that we really like. So you know, we're gonna try and help Trey. Trey's a 14-year-old boy with a hypoplastic left heart syndrome, which basically means that his left heart doesn't pump. Not his left heart, but his heart doesn't pump blood very efficiently. So he's trying to get a heart transplant. So I'm trying to help raise money for that.
And, this gets your shorts, your bag, also gets some tickets to the fights, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. And the hotel's paid for the weekend, too.
And correct me if I'm wrong here, if you email TJ Hodges at 247@gmail.com, that's how kind of get more information on this?
Yeah, absolutely. You talk to TJ. He's kind of the orchestrator behind everything. So he'll tell you how to make your bid, how to make your offer. And, he'll also be the one who announces the winner.
Of course, you got this fight, first fight since February, the loss to Lyoto. Obviously, you've grown as a martial artist. But what was – I'm sure it was probably frustrating for you to get over that loss. But how did you what did you learn from that?
I think the biggest takeaway is how judges look at a fight and score a fight. If you look at the total strikes, you know, he outlanded me by a lot, but at the same time, you know, he was just, you know, kicking me with his foot, you know, not doing a whole lot of damage. So, during the course of the fight, he would kick me and I'd be like, nah, that, you know, it didn't have nothing on it, you know, didn't do any damage or anything, you know, didn't really do anything to change the course of the fight. So, you know, I wasn't scoring it and seeing it as they saw it. So. The fight IQ come away with that fight.
We talked about going into that fight. You've been in hostile situations before, playing in Alabama, going to places like LSU. How did it relate being in Brazil with the fans chanting, you're going to die?
Man, it was cool. You know, it really wasn't that bad. During the week, the fans in and around the hotel were awesome. They did their chant, but, you know, you really can't pay yourself no attention when you're in there actually, you know, fighting and whatnot. So, you know, I thought they were great.
And I know once that fight ended, you were like, man, let's get a fight quickly back in there. But it's been some time. So did you ultimately and your team decide to kind of take a little extra time or just kind of the way it played out?
No, I had elbow surgery immediately following the fight. So, you know, that sat me down for, you know, a month or two, and then, you know, start training and whatnot, getting back in shape. And around that time, all the middleweights, you know, were either scheduled to fight or had recently fought. So, you know, I just kind of had to wait and sit my turn and wait for something to come up.
And, of course, it's Tim Williams, the opponent here. Were you familiar with Tim before the fight offer even came in?
I believe him and I were supposed to fight either, you know, I think my second fight in the UFC. But, you know, for whatever reason, the fight didn't happen. I can't remember exactly the circumstances around it, but, watched a little film on him. So you know, I think he's definitely going to try and get in close and grapple, and, you know, because, you know, he's got 8 wins by submission. So I'm looking. I don't think it's a secret. Everybody knows when I get in there what I'm trying to do. So, you know, I'm going to try and keep it on the feet. But at the same time, I'm very comfortable everywhere.
Speaking of watching film, I know you put it on your Instagram recently where they filmed a session with you and Coach Saban, and Coach Saban had this look on his face, like just like a proud papa. You know, kind of what did Coach Saban think when you're showing him your fight film? What was kind of that interaction like?
Man, you know, he's very happy and supportive, and, you know, felt like that I, you know, doing something like this, I'd make a great transition into, just because he knows the way I work, the way I train, and you know, things like that. So he's not surprised at, you know, the level of success I've had up until this point.
And, you know, obviously, this is your 4th fight now coming up here in the UFC. How would you say your mindset and looking at the fight game is different now as opposed to when you made your UFC debut?
I wouldn't say it's changed a whole lot. You know, I'm still hungry. I'm still, you know, have a lot of checks in the box to make. So, I don't know. I'm just having fun taking it a fight at a time and, you know, trying to make it to the top.
They always talk about, you know, it's go out there, have fun. What would you, how would you describe what having fun inside the MMA arena is for you?
Just going out there and competing, you know, win, lose, or draw, you know. At the end of the day, it's a competition. There's money on the line. There's a lot at stake. You know, you put yourself out there to be criticized by other people. If you win, you're the greatest guy. If you lose, you're the worst. So, and, you know, to me, it's just competition. So just going out there and competing is the fun part.
Are you harder on yourself as a fighter as opposed to being a football player?
I think the consequences are a lot worse in MMA. You know, you leave your hands down, you get knocked out, you leave your neck up, you know, your chin up or whatever. You get choked out, so you know, you mess up in football, they just run the next play or, you know, whatever. You know, so you get another chance in football. In MMA, you know, it could be the end of the fight. So I'm way, you know, tougher on myself as far as MMA training goes, just because the consequences are more severe.
And, you know, heading into this matchup, a win would be your 3rd win in the UFC. Have you started to kind of put out a timeline of what you want the rest of this year to be?
Man, I would definitely, you know, it seems like all the other middleweights are fighting in Madison Square, you know, in November. So, you know, I'm waiting on my invitation. You know, I would love to fight in, you know, in the Garden. You know, I think that's one of the most prestigious arenas in America. So, you know. It'd be awesome to get a chance to fight in there.
Is that a bucket list item for you to fight in Madison Square Garden?
Yeah, absolutely, man. You know, a lot of good stuff happens in there.
Is there some other bucket list items of venues that, you know, before you call it a career that you would just love to fight in?
Venues, not necessarily venues, but, you know, I want to fight overseas a little bit more. So we'll see if we can't make that happen after this fight.
And, you know, as, you know, what else is going on outside out of the octagon for you? I saw that you were recently at a Boys and Girls Club, and I know this is a big part of your life of giving back to the community. Do you got some other community events coming up?
Not before the fight, I don't. You know, sometimes, you know, I have some spare time now, so I like to reach out and do a little community outreach and stuff like that. So when I have the time, so we're few weeks before the fight, so, you know, really working on, you know, cutting the weight and getting rest and, you know, still developing and whatnot. So sometimes I gotta put that in the rear view sometimes.
Eric, I look forward to seeing the fight here on August 25th. As always, man, I appreciate your time and good luck in the fight.
All right, appreciate you having me.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report is a man that's going to be fighting here at the UFC Fight Night card in Lincoln, Nebraska on Saturday night, August 25th. It is John Tuck. John, as always, man, I appreciate the time. It has been a long time since we've seen you. By the time you step into the cage, 13 months between fights. So how would you describe these last 13 months?
Man, these past 13 months, been good. you know, after my fight with Gomi, I was trying to get a fight with Sage Northcutt because he needed an opponent for the UFC Anaheim card. But, you know, of course, in their terms, I guess, wasn't met because of the style of fighter that I am. But I was trying to get some fights after that, got married in between that. I was training for a fight around November, December, but nothing came through, and I ended up having to do a knee cleanup and got that situated, and then just been refining on my techniques and then helping other people get their techniques refined as well. So it's been an eventful year for the past 13 months.
Was a knee cleanup just something like, hey man, I've got this downtime and might as well get this thing taken care of now? Or was it something that you had kind of been delaying for a while?
Yeah, I was delaying it for about a year. I got this like knee injury before I fought Damian Brown, or around that time. I think in the fight, I kind of tweaked my knee, and it was just, you know, just one of those little freak accidents. And it wasn't affecting me, and it got better. And then I fought Gomi, and then I don't know, for some reason after Gomi, it flared up or something like that. And I was just having some hindrance with my way my knee functioned. Some days I could walk, get to training, and I'll walk. I won't be able to walk after, or not walk and get to training, and somehow just be walking after like nothing ever happened. So I got it all settled and everything in that time from then and now.
I did see you recently at the UFC PI during International Fight Week, and you know, and fighters have talked about just you know, the advantages that are there in terms of. For you, what's your biggest takeaway of being at the PI? Is it just simply the educational aspect that, you know, kind of how you can learn how your body reacts to certain things?
Yeah, I mean, like, besides the training aspect and then going to the Performance Institute, there's a lot of knowledge, and I could spend, like, I geek out on those things. So it's like, I'm very aware of my body, and over the years I was like kind of like my own guinea pig, you know, trying to figure out things, how to get better, how to perform better. But these guys have it down to a science more so than I do. You know, they're black belts and that's in that sense, you know, they got their masters and doctorates and everything like that. You know, from Duncan French and Dr. Roman Fullman, Matt, I could sit with those guys for like hours and just get knowledge, you know, straight from the source. And yeah, it's nice to go there, and you know, all the other stuff, the cold pool, you know, sauna, I've been through all that already, you know, the cryo chamber, etc. Inside the physical therapist and the personal trainers, they're a great bunch too as well. I mean, the whole package, they're amazing staff and very, very helpful and definitely knowledgeable to take away a lot of great things from them, and, you know, try to put those together with my training and put the package together. Good vibes and good knowledge.
Do you prefer the cryotherapy tank over the cold tub?
You know, it's just whatever I feel that. Whatever I feel on those types of days, I'm kind of a bit crazy. I'll jump in. Every time I go there, I'll jump in the jacuzzi and then just hop over that little ledge, right straight diving into the cold pool. People are like, "Man, what are you crazy?" You know, all the other guys are like, "Man, you're nuts." And I'll just stay in there for like 15, 20 minutes just to freeze out, you know, chill out. But crowd therapy is cool too. You know, it's a quick way to get my body temperature down, and you know, it's good for the skin and all that, shock therapy.
And of course, you've got this fight here that you've been in preparations for some time against Drew Dober. You know, first off, when the fight gets offered, I'm sure part of this was like, hey man, I don't care who the name is, just give me a fight. But what was your thoughts of Drew and why you liked the matchup?
Drew, you know. Yeah, I've been waiting for a fight for, I don't know, since February, March or something, you know. I was hoping I was going to fight on this August 4 card too, just this weekend, because, you know, I train out here in California as well. And they got a lot of people from Guam all over this side of the town. You know, it's just a drive away, 30-minute drive, and I'll be fighting at the Staples Center. But, you know, going to Nebraska is cool too. Fighting, when I got offered to fight Drew, I thought it was awesome because, you know, me and Drew came from, we're kind of like the tough 15 castaways, you know. We had that one special tough live where we fought one round, and if you didn't make it in, then, you know, then you're pretty much booted from that. But we both came back and showed that we do belong in the UFC, and he's had some good fights under his belt, lost a couple, picked himself back up, and kind of similar to what I've gone through besides the two decisions that I got robbed, basically. And, you know, I thought it was a great matchup. You know, he's a great martial artist, and so am I, and we both love to bring the fight to the fans, and I can't look, you know, what more can you ask for? I'm not into fighting guys with, I don't know. I like exciting fights. I like fighting exciting fighters, and that's what brings out the best in me. And, you know, he's respectful, and, you know, it's nothing but the love for martial arts and putting it on there for the fight fans, you know, getting that finish too.
Tough 15 seems like forever ago, back in 2012. I mean, is it feel that long to you?
It does and it doesn't. You know, my daughter was born like 2 days before the actual showing, so I was locked down, and, you know, it was cool enough that they let me get on Skype and see my girl right as she was born. But even at that, they kind of flew me out right before then. I know I'm taking you to this point in time because it seems like so long ago, but not really, you know. But just seeing the, I look at it through my daughter, because she's 6 years old now, and that's 6 years ago. And I almost kind of see it's been fast since then as well too. But, yeah, it's a bit of both.
I mean, how did fatherhood, did fatherhood change the way you view the fight game at all? Or, you know, obviously, I'm sure it offered much more motivation, but did it change kind of how you viewed the game?
Definitely. I think it just kept me more disciplined, and it gave me more motivation because I am providing, you know, for a family, and I just want to make sure that I come home safe. You know, I don't want to go in there and come out banged up. You know, sometimes the training camps are the toughest ones that you know, sometimes you trying to drag your own leg to the fight, whatever it is. But just being smart, knowledgeable of going into the fight, training smart, eating correct, and just being well-rounded in all aspects of life to be able to enjoy my life in the latter years after fighting. So definitely gives me a purpose in life, you know, as being a father.
Is there a timeline of how long you want to fight, or is it just that mindset of, look, I know at some point this is going to come to an end?
Man, honestly, I mean, look at Hansel Gracie, dude. That guy fought you know, he's a OG legend, you know, he's a master and everything. And he fought at 51 years old. Of course, he fought another guy. And I think that's cool how, you know, they lined up the age around each other. But you can't take away from both. They're both great fighters. Chuck and Tito are looking to do fourth time or whatever. But, Damian Maia, a lot of the older guys, just, they give me motivation. Yoel Romero, you know what I mean? Like, as long as you keep your mind right and your body in tip-top shape. I mean, even the fact that I started training when I was 20, 22, 23, and so I mean, other than defending myself growing up, you know, growing up in Guam, I don't have too much mileage like a lot of these guys. But over the past what, 10 years? Of course, there's a bit injuries here and there, but some people has been in the sport for like 20 years or training since they're like 4 years old. So I don't have that much mileage like them. So I think I could take this even further, and definitely getting myself into the top 10 so that one day I could fight for the belt. You know, some of the guys that I have fought were, you know, just right there at top 10 and fought for the belt. So I'm right around there. And on any given night, I could have beat those guys that I lost to by decision. So it's all good. It's just part of the martial arts package, you know, and just keep pushing through. And, you know, I mean, I look at Michael Bisping. He was what? This is like 39 or something?
37, 38, 39, somewhere in the, yeah, late 30s. Yeah,
late 30s. And, you know, he's had a lot of ups and downs. So, I mean, he became champion. So, I'm, you know, just staying positive and don't cheat myself, and I'll be right there sooner or later.
And, of course, this fight is coming up here Saturday night, August the 25th, live on FS1 from Lincoln, Nebraska, UFC Fight Night Lincoln. John, as always, I appreciate the time. Of course, let everyone know where they can follow you out on social media.
Yeah, you can find me on social media at John, J-O-N, Cruz, C-R-U-Z, T-U-C-K. The Super Saiyan's going to bring a good night of fights to UFC Lincoln. I'm excited about it, and I just thankful for everybody that follows and sticks with me through this game. You know, everybody's trying to see those one night, you know, the overnight sensations, but no overnight sensation. They come with the hard work. So stick with it, and look forward to seeing you guys in Fox Sports 1, you know, with my hand raised.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report is a man that's going to be a part of the Shamrock Car on Saturday night. Of course, that's August the 18th. Johnny Eblen, who is 2-0, his career trains out of American Top Team. Johnny, man, I appreciate time. You come into MMA from being a wrestler at the University of Missouri. I mean, even when you were competing at Missouri, was MMA on your radar?
Not really. I mean, I was just kind of living in the moment. I was, completely invested in college wrestling. And, you know, I kind of just competed hard, did the best I could. I didn't quite, achieve the goals I wanted to achieve. I ended up moving down to Florida, and then I was working a normal job. I worked at Atlantic Southern Paving, and then, I was also coaching at American Heritage Del Rey. And I met Steve Mako one day because I was coaching a kid doing private lessons, and Mako kind of got me into the gym. And I mean, I've always kind of liked MMA, but I never really thought about competing. I didn't really know how to get into it, but Mako was kind of that outlet that got me into MMA. And then once he got me into American Top Team, I mean, I just kept going back, and then I never looked back.
Do you remember the first time you can remember watching an MMA fight?
Oh yeah. I mean, I used to watch, fights cause my brother used to fight when I was younger. He would always have these tapes, and they were like the first UFCs. I can't remember exactly which one, but I remember like watching these guys. I was like, man, these guys are savages. Like, they're just putting on little gloves and just going at it. And then it just looked so primal and awesome. I loved it. Cause I mean, I love competition. I wrestled since I was four. I played football. I played every type of sport you could imagine. But in high school, I wrestled and played football. So I just liked the competition. I liked it. It was something I've always kind of was interested in. Just didn't know how to get into it. You know.
What would you say is the best attribute you brought to MMA? You know, from the collegiate wrestling game.
I would say, especially since I was a collegiate wrestler, I learned how to like take people down and hold them down. Like, there's something about collegiate wrestling that's different than freestyle and Greco. Yeah. Freestyle Greco, it's a different style. There's more throws. It's the point system's a little different, but there's parterre in freestyle and Greco. And if you don't turn the guy, they just put you back on your feet. Where in collegiate, you have to work to get up, and you have to work to hold the guy down. You get an escape point, whereas in freestyle and Greco you don't. So I think that's a really big thing that I brought over into MMA, is to be able to take people down and hold them down and then ground and pound them.
You mentioned about Steve Mako bringing you into American Top Team, and that was really what kind of got everything going here for you. But what does your family think about you being a fighter?
I mean, my dad likes the idea. He's always, I mean, my brother used to fight. He called it off though because he had to get a real job, support a family. And then my mom hates it, but she supports me. But for the most part, I mean, my family doesn't love the fact that I fight, but I think they like it because, I mean, I'm a professional athlete. It's cool. They like to come to my fights. They support me. But also they realize there's real consequences to the game, you know, like you can get hurt, there's injuries, all that sorts of stuff. So they don't like that part of it, but they love when I go in, you know, put on a show and I win. So.
They always talk about you gotta love to do this. This just isn't a sport where you can like to do it. You gotta love to do it. What was that love? Was that an instant thing? Like the first time you had a sparring session, you're like, man, you know what? I love this. Or did it take some time?
No, to be honest, man, like I got punched in the face like hard, and I just went back at the dude. Like I liked it. Like it pumped me up. You know, I don't shy away from challenges like this, especially like MMA. It was something totally new, which is why I sparked such an interest into it. Like wrestling was really awesome for me, but collegiate wrestling's tough, man. Cause you're drilling the same stuff. You're drilling the same, like doing the same shit every day. Whereas MMA, you can learn Muay Thai, you can learn kickboxing. There's jiu-jitsu. I mean, obviously you always have to wrestle and, you know, keep yourself honest, with the wrestling game, but there's boxing. I mean, there's so many things to learn. And I think that's the biggest thing that really kept me, you know, coming back is like, man, there's so much I want to learn and so much I want to do with this sport, you know?
Have you learned more about yourself and MMA abilities and things along those lines more in the training room or in, your amateur and pro fights?
I mean, being at Top Team, there's really good fighters there and a lot of good looks. And yeah, obviously competing is always important. Competition, you learn a lot from competing. I actually try to tell my high school wrestlers that, cause some of them, you know, they'll come in and train, but they get nervous to go compete. And I'm like, hey man, you gotta go compete and put yourself, you know, on the line and, you know, figure it out. Cause that's how you get better. So I think, I learned from both, you know, from both being in the training room and competing.
If one of your high school wrestlers came to you and said, Coach, I want to be a professional fighter one day, would you try to talk them away from doing it? Or would you just basically sit down, just have an honest conversation, go, well, if this is what you want to do, this is what you can expect?
Honestly, I mean, I let them have fun with it. You know, if they want to learn a little boxing, I'll show them a little boxing. I think it's always good. I mean, I don't talk it up, but I don't talk it down. I'm honest with them, but I'll help them out. And it's kind of up to them to figure it out if they really love it or not, you know? Because like you said, it has to be something that you really honestly love if you're going to do it. Because if you don't love it and you're just, you're not going to last, you know? It's going to be a short career and it might not end up good, you know? But I try not to shy away from it. I try to sit them down, be honest with them, and I'll help them if they want help.
Is there anything the MMA fan would be surprised to know about you?
I mean, not really. I'm just a wrestler transitioning to MMA and trying to make it big, you know, trying to become a world champ. Crazy about me.
So when you're not in the training room, I mean, and you just have some downtime for yourself, I mean, is there anything that you like to do? I mean, is it, you know, hey, I sit at home and, you know, watch TV or whatnot. I mean, is it kind of a simple life for you?
Yeah. I mean, I'll play video games here and there. I really hang out with my girlfriend a lot. Actually I just got a dog recently. So I mean, she's basically my world. I mean, I play with her every day. We play fetch. I'm always teaching her stuff, you know? I mean, it's pretty simple. I train like 2-3 times a day. So that's most of the time when my time off, I'm, you know, eating, relaxing, you know, playing a video game, taking my dog out to play fetch. And then next thing I know, oh, I gotta go train again. And I get back. I'm like, okay, well now I'm going to eat dinner and go to sleep and then wake up and do it all over again. So I mean, I'm pretty busy. I got a lot going on in my life. I don't really, I mean, maybe the only other thing I like to do is go out every once in a while, have a couple beers and, you know, hang out with friends and catch up, you know, do random stuff with coaches. Like, we'll do escape room. Like, I went to escape room with Mike Brown, Joanna John Jacek, and, Mike Brown's girlfriend, and my girlfriend went, and, like, you know, fun stuff like that. We'll go to eat sushi, go out, you know, have a good time. But besides that, man, nothing really.
And now, because of your, you know, your history in sports, when you go, when you're out with you know, your teammates, and you're at the escape room, does a competitive mindset still kick in? Like, I've got to beat all these people in here?
Not really. I mean, so, like, maybe if we're playing a board game or something like that, but escape room is more about teamwork. Actually, there's no competition. There's you're trying to beat the clock as a competition. So it's more about teamwork. You know, it's almost like a team building thing, really. But not really. When we go out, everything's cool. We're all, you know, we're all chill. There's no competition.
I was looking at your Tapology page, and it has your nickname as John. Is that the correct nickname?
No, my nickname's really Jeblin. My buddy Drake Houdeschelt, he's a national champ from Missouri. I think now he coaches down in Texas, but he actually originally gave me that nickname in college, and it kind of stuck. And then I came into the MMA world, and I was like, I don't know if this is a good nickname, and I don't know. It kind of just still stuck with me, and I like it. I think it's simple, but Jeblin, you know, J. Eblin. I think it's a good nickname for me, you know.
Awesome, awesome. And, of course, you got the fight here, Shamrock FC 308, coming on Saturday night, August 18th, from the Ameristar Casino. Where can my listeners follow you at on social media?
Follow me at Johnny Eblin on Instagram and Twitter. Also, you can find me on Facebook. I'm not really on Facebook too much, more just for family reasons, you know, keep up with my family because they all have Facebook. But at Johnny Eblin, simple as that.
And there was my conversation with Eric Anders, John Tuck, and Johnny Eblin. I appreciate all those fighters coming on to talk to me about their upcoming fights. Of course, Eric and John will be fighting next Saturday at UFC Lincoln, and Johnny Eblin will be fighting on Saturday night at Shamrock FC 208. Before we get into our weekly buy-sell segment, we'll get into some questions and comments that have been submitted to me. Up first, got on via Twitter from at JoeDaddy85. First, asked of my thoughts on Dan Stupp no longer with MMA Junkie. You know, I think for there are probably some people listening to podcasts have no idea who Dan Stupp is. Dan was the longtime managing editor of MMA Junkie, was one of the co-founders of the site. I saw it last week where I think the term was that he parted ways. And, you know, look, I have no idea what happened there. I had a limited interaction with Dan. Obviously, when you talk about, you know, some of the OGs of MMA media, Dan Stupp is in there. You know, we'll see if he lands on his feet, if he continues in MMA. You know, I have a ton of respect for what Dan Stupp did. And I mean, how, you know, co-founding MMA Junkie, but without being, you know, in that inner circle of USA Today, I don't know what happened there, but I can just say, you know, he was a guy that I was always able to reach out to, and if I ever, you know, wanted to pick his brain on something, he was always very accessible for me.
Yeah, man, there's a lot of value in creating an MMA website like MMA Junkie. I mean, that is one of the juggernauts in the MMA landscape world, MMA media world, and you know. To create something like that, be a part of the be a captain there for over 10 years, it's damn impressive, and it speaks a lot to the influence he had. So, you know, thank you to Dan Stupp. I can't tell you how often the MMA Junkie results of specific fights came in handy when, like, if I'm doing a fight preview and I'm crunching for time, and I don't have the ability to watch fights, but I want to recall maybe what happened four or five fights ago in a fighter's career, man, I'll go to the MMA Junkie results. And I just think they do a great job with each individual fight, just reminding you what transpired. So, MMA Junkie is absolutely, you know, one of the top two or three or four or five best MMA websites behind the MMA Report. So.
Oh, I mean, look, it's my daily reading. There are certain websites I go to every day, just kind of, you know, see what's going on and try to read some of the stories that are out there. Also, Joe asked about Tom Lawler. Of course, I'm sure by now most people have seen he has been released by the UFC. And Joe wrote, he says, how can the UFC drop Tom Lawler just 2 months before his 2-year suspension is up, asked for his release early on and was denied, wrestles on the indie scene and can't appear on TV for his contract. John Jones still has not been tested, which I kind of understand that. I think that has a lot to do with kind of what John, the arbitration aspect that's going through. I think that plays into that. But I mean, I think really the only thing you can say on the whole Tom Lawler situation, it's just BS the way the UFC handled this situation. I mean, look, if you knew you weren't going to be in the Tom Lawler business, you know, 14, 16 months ago, why not just release him at that point? Just let the guy kind of move on with his life.
Well, I think it speaks to the fact that the UFC just, man, I don't know how to say it. They aren't very personable like maybe they once were. I have a feeling that this wasn't like some devious plan by the UFC to, you know, hold out on Tom Lawler. I think this was a fact of spreadsheets, and maybe the ownership change kind of ruins the way business is done. And the way business was done here is awful. To withhold opportunity for a guy who you won't give a fight again for that long a period of time, it's just pathetic, and it looks bad, and it's a reason why it's a story for the time being. I think Tom Lawler, despite his age, still provides value as a fighter that people care about. He's not a super duper star, but people want to see him fight.
Oh, I think he'll be in Bellator.
I think he will too. And the thing is, like, he wasn't the best fighter in the world, but looking back at his last few fights, I mean, the fights he did lose were close decisions, and he was fighting guys who were at a pretty high level. It's been a long layoff. And the amount of time he's probably invested in pro wrestling, including injuries he suffered inside the ring, his skill has probably subsided. But I think he can definitely hang in Bellator. And I just want to point out one thing. I'm not super sure how much the UFC contract limited his wrestling opportunities, because I do know Tom Lawler did wrestle on TV, you know, over the summer for Major League Wrestling. But that was like on BN Sports or something. So maybe that doesn't even count. But he did wrestle on TV, so that kind of sucks, but again, the whole deal is awful. And if you're Bellator, I would definitely try and put Tom Lawler on TV, because there's a subset of the MMA audience that cares about him.
Oh, no question. And I think that you know, he's going to be, you'll see him in MMA cage at some point. Another question I got was asking about you know, fighter contract situation with Bellator with some of the fighters. Was asked on the MMAreport.com by a combat sports fan, asking about Caratano, Flashley, Minnikov, Shlemenko, Chandler. You know, Chandler situation, I think everyone knows what that is. The other ones I've asked, but I haven't gotten a response yet on that. So, you know, I can't say one way or the other of where those stand with that one. So those are some of the questions and comments that we did get. Also do want to mention, I put it on my social media when I was at the ABC meeting, the Retired Fighters Fund that the Association of Boxing Commission Combative Sports is doing, and was talking to Mike Mazzulli about this. And you can actually now donate to the Retired Fighters Fund on the ABC website, abcboxing.com. So if you want to help out some of these fighters and hear some of the stories that, you know, how they are helping out these retired fighters that have fallen on hard times, you can hit that up on abcboxing.com. But of course, Daniel, it is time for the buy sell segment. And we mentioned about Darren Till a little while ago, and the first buy sell segment's on Darren Till. Darren Till is a bigger threat to dethrone Tyron Woodley than Colby Covington.
Oh, man. I took a moment to think there. Buy. I buy this for sure. I really do. I think a big reason why, Jason, is when you look at that UFC poster and you look and see how much bigger Darren Till is than Tyron Woodley. That physical advantage is huge.
What, and, like, if you're Tyron Woodley, yeah, what's your thoughts on that poster?
Your thoughts is, I'm sure as hell not going to take the damn fight if Darren Till misses weight. You know, or you should Photoshop it and just put a, you know, some fat around the waist of Darren Till or something. But yeah, that poster made Tyron Woodley look so minuscule, which is like a bad look for their champion. But that's why I think Darren Till is a slightly bigger threat, even though I think it's pretty clear what Colby Covington can do to Woodley. There's more. It's more clear the idea of him maybe out-wrestling him, but it's really damn hard to out-wrestle Woodley. So that's why I'm buying that Darren Till's a bigger threat.
I'm selling it.
Okay.
And the reason, and part of it is the wrestling that Colby Covington has, but, I mean, really, you look back at that RDA fight, and you saw the evolution of Colby Covington's game. And I'm not saying that either one of these guys are necessarily going to be Tyron Woodley, but I think I'll give it to Colby has a better shot just because of a more well-rounded game. I mean, Darren Till is an incredible stand-up fighter. I think Till Woodley is going to be another version of Woodley Thompson.
Okay, I could definitely see that for sure. I mean, to me, both those fights, that's a great question. I think both those guys are in that same realm of possibility when it comes to being able to dethrone Woodley.
Next up, of course, it was announced last week that the California State Athletic Commission doctors have recommended for Alex Perez and Brett Johns to move up in weight. Both those fighters were two weight divisions above their contracted weight on fight night. So buy or sell, the UFC will honor the California State Athletic Commission doctor recommendations for Alex Perez and Brett Johns to move up in weight. Daniel, I'm selling this. I don't know how you buy it.
I'm selling this too. I think maybe they might send an email to both fighters. Hey, here's the recommendation. But a recommendation is a recommendation. And I just don't think the UFC is going to enforce this, which is kind of unfortunate.
Yeah, you would hope they would, but you know, that's going to be an interesting thing just to see if there's more states besides California that start releasing those fight night weights, and I think it's definitely going to – it's already gotten people talking. I mentioned a little bit about Michael Chandler being a free agent. Eddie Alvarez, we all know he's now a free agent. Buy or sell, Eddie Alvarez's next fight will be in Bellator.
I'm selling this, Jason. I think the UFC re-signs him. I think Bellator should be interested. How about you?
My gut is he ends up back in Bellator, or back in UFC, excuse me, so I'll sell this. But, man, I guess, you know, what is the percentage that Chandler Alvarez 3 takes place November 24th in Inglewood, California as a co-main event of Golden Boy MMA?
That's a good question. That's a good question.
Would you go higher than 20%?
No, I think it'd be lower than 20%. Just because that is, when you take into account, I think 50% for the UFC, you know, 25% for Bellator, 10% for ONE FC. You know, I don't know. I think maybe a little. I mean, that might be the right range. But like I was gonna say, and by the way, if you're Golden Boy, damn. That fight validates your fight card. That does. There's a lot of money there.
It's weird to me you're doing it on Thanksgiving weekend, though.
Yeah, that's true. That's not the greatest weekend for MMA. That's football. Jason, here's the audible I was going to throw at you. I figured this would be a good way to – this is a buy or sell audible. I'm going to throw it at you.
All right.
It's a good way to tackle both fighters' free agencies. Buy or sell within the next 2 years – we see Michael Chandler versus Eddie Alvarez 3.
Buy it.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Both guys are free agents. It doesn't matter what promotion they're in. I think that fight's going to happen again also.
Yeah, I mean, look, it wouldn't shock me if it's the next fight for both guys.
Yeah, and then the question is, which promotion?
I would say UFC number one. The reason I would say Golden Boy number two is Oscar De La Hoya is really throwing out these hints. He's going to be throwing a lot of money at fighters.
Exactly. I could see that because like it's like if you're Bellator, I think the likelihood is that they're going to sign one of the two, not both. Whereas Golden Boy could just write that big paycheck.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what Golden Boy can do. Can they change some things up? Our final buy-sell has to do with Demetrius Johnson. So with Demetrius Johnson's injury, the UFC will book TJ Dillashaw versus Henry Cejudo. I saw something on, I don't know if it was my Facebook or on Instagram, where is it Extra, the Mario Lopez host? Is that the show he hosts?
I'm pretty sure he hosts that, but I don't watch that show.
So both of them, Henry Cejudo was on, TJ Dillashaw walks up, and I'm like, oh, they're already start. Whether that was planned by the UFC or just naturally happened, it seems like the UFC is trying to get people up on this idea. And like, as much as I don't really, I could see why it would be of a rooting interest, but to me, I think the only reason that fight would happen is A, DJ's out for some time. B, Dillashaw says I will fight at 125 pounds. But if we're talking 135 pounds, TJ's next title defense should be against one of three people: Marlon Moraes, Rafael Sunzao, or Dominic Cruz.
Yep. I completely agree with you. This is like even removing Demetrius Johnson from the perspective. I'm a fan. I'm a part of the Rafael Sunzao gets a title shot fan club. And for him to get pushed down the ladder for Henry Cejudo would be absurd.
Okay.
With that being said, it's like for Demetrius Johnson, how many times is he regretting all the times he passed up that champion versus champion fight opportunity?
I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know. You know, I mean, look, if you want people to consider this a sport, Rafael Sunzao should be getting the next title shot.
Yeah.
But it's just the more and more, and you know, sometimes I find it tough to believe the UFC believes they're a sports format. I mean, just look at some of the fights that just get booked. I mean, I understand there's a financial component to all this and what's going to get, you know, the fans the most interested, but even if the fans were all giddy for TJ Henry Cejudo, is it going to sell more than 250,000 pay-per-view buys?
No, I don't think so. I really don't. And it's like that's not much of a difference between Dillashaw defending his championship on a pay-per-view against his rightful contenders.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot. Well, the report just came out. What was it? 204 or reportedly did 300,000 buys, which I thought was a pretty good number for that card.
Yeah, but that fight's not going to have more juice than Garbrandt Dillashaw.
No.
So don't sell your soul for 200,000 buys, is what we're saying.
No, yeah, it's it'll be interesting to kind of see, what kind of happens. But we'll see what happens. By the way, coming up on next week's podcast, we are going to recap Bellator 204. PFL 6 will get you ready for that UFC Lincoln card, plus scheduled to be on the podcast, Anthony Romero, Greg Rebello, and working on getting confirmation on my final guest. So hopefully have that confirmation here in the next day or so. But I get to head up to Nashville this weekend, a fun city, and work the Bucks Titans game up there on Saturday this week, and then I'm home until the second week of September, Daniel. It's kind of gonna be nice. I actually like had a full weekend off last weekend. It was really nice just sitting on the couch and pretty much doing nothing, and probably being like most Americans on Sunday watching Tiger Woods.
Yeah, man, talk about a comeback. Don't call it a comeback. Also, shout out to Brooks Koepka, who has won like two majors in a short period of time, and no one cares.
No one cares at all. I mean, like, I would love a bit of fly on the wall of all the CBS executives on Sunday as they're seeing Tiger in contention. Like, you know, they were all throwing a party.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. I mean, for them, it's all about that Friday night where they get a feel of how Tiger Woods is playing and if they're going to have a relevant Tiger Woods on Sunday and Saturday. And once that goes, they can go buy some Fireball and some whiskey and just drink. And you know, to me, the golf contract is all about betting on Tiger being back. And by God, Tiger's back. I mean, hey, if you combine the two scores for the last two majors, he has the best score among any other golfer.
I saw that. Yeah, that was a crazy. I'm just saying, did you see when Brooks walked up after winning? And there were captions like, Brooks, don't let Tiger near your girlfriend.
I know. Tiger's back in more ways than one. Look, yeah, I think comeback of the year is done in sports.
Oh, I mean, look, I mean, golf needs that. I mean, and look, I'm a huge sports fan, but am I sitting at home on a Sunday watching a golf tournament if Tiger's not at the leaderboard? Nope.
Me neither. There are a select few golfers that I will. Jordan Spieth really resonated with me because I was from Texas, and so is he. But other than Tiger, not really.
No, it's just, and you know, I was like watching my Twitter timeline. I mean, various people and all types of, you know, sports people that I follow on social media, and it's one of those things. And really, in MMA, the only person we have for that is Conor McGregor.
Yeah, yeah. John Jones, maybe.
Yeah, we'll end on this note because this guy asked me at a lunch meeting today. If Khabib Nurmagomedov doesn't make it to October 6th, who's Conor McGregor fighting?
Is the answer Nate Diaz?
I kind of think it's Nate Diaz, right?
Yeah, I think it's Nate Diaz. I think Nate Diaz is already expecting to fight on that date.
I mean, like, I can't see the UFC turn to Dustin Poirier or Tony Ferguson. It's got to be Nate Diaz. It's got to be, right?
Well, what if it is Tony Ferguson?
Tony Ferguson, he did have that tweet on, was it Monday? You know, saying, what was it? I'm cleared for combat or something along those lines. Which the weird part about it, if you follow Tony Ferguson, a majority, if not all of his tweets are in all caps. Which I'm like, which makes me wonder, is he doing that from his phone? Because if you're doing that from that phone, that's going to take a hell of a long time.
Maybe he's just screaming at his phone. He's doing like the voice to text. Oh my gosh! You mean like the first word of every, the first letter of every word?
Yeah.
That's nuts. I thought you meant every letter was capitalized.
I think he has had some of those, but yeah, it's
That's nuts. It's a lot of time.
He's the one guy in the lightweight division. I just feel bad for him. I mean, you look at the run he's been on and. Just bad luck.
Yeah, it's so sad watching him with the title, the picture of the title.
If you're him, you just walk around with that title. Like you do the whole Colby Covington. You haven't taken this title away from me.
Yeah. Maybe the way we get Tony Ferguson in a Conor McGregor fight is we don't announce it until the day of when he's an injury replacement. That might just be the remedy.
I'll tell you, I like how they put Sean O'Malley on that fight card.
Oh, yeah.
Because I sat there and I saw like, you know, I know Marlon Moraes was calling for a title shot on that card. I'm like, from the UFC, there's no reason to put another title fight on that card just because, you know, you're going to, you know, give those guys pay-per-view points, which we both know, you know, a second title fight is not selling one additional pay-per-view buy. People are tuning in on October 6th for one reason only. That's Conor McGregor.
Yep. To me, the recipe is simple. You litter that main card with guys who you think could potentially become draws but aren't now. And don't waste guys who will already bring you in money.
Exactly. Because
they're getting all the money already.
So that is going to wrap it up for this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast. Of course, you can always hear this podcast on radioinfluence.com. Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and Google Play. As I mentioned, coming up on next week's edition of the podcast, we'll be talking to Greg Rebello, talk about his coming out of retirement. Also, talk to a young fighter, Anthony Romero, who's got a fight coming up in King of the Cage, and we'll start to get you ready for next week's UFC card, which is going to be taking place in Lincoln, Nebraska.
This is the Landry Football with Chris Landry. Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
Ohio State and this committee is in a situation where they've got to come up with a reason to explain how all of this was happening and Urban knew nothing and sell it to the public and move on with him as a head coach and make a couple of cosmetic changes. Or they've got to find something that is proof that Urban knew and he was negligent and fire him with cause. I mean, it's one of the two. I mean, the only other option is unlikely. Fire him without cause and then pay him $40 million. That's just not going to happen. That's going to alienate your fan base, and that's going to cost you a whole lot of money. And I think that if you think about it, if they fire him, they are going to fire him with cause and fight it and at least reduce the amount that they owe him.
Chris Landry brings you Landry Football every week on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and, of course, RadioInfluence.com.